Blog Talk Radio.
Well, I hate you. Oh, Katisha, is there not beauty even in bloodthirstiness?
My idea. Exactly.
There is beauty in the bellow on the floor. There is grandeur in the growling of the gay. There is eloquence a-falling when the lion is a-roaring and the tiger is a-lashing of his tail.
Yes, I like to see a tiger from the Congo or the Niger, and especially when lashing of his tail.
Volcanoes have a splendor that is grim, and earthquakes only terrify the dirt. But to him who's scientific, there is nothing that's terrific in the falling of a flight of thunderbirds.
Yes, in spite of all my meekness, if I have a little weakness, it's a passion for a flight of thunderbirds.
If that's it, then sing Daddy Down Daddy, it's evidence, Betty, all kids are one. Away we go, and verily, Mary, no comedy, Sally, till day is done.
There is beauty in extreme old age, few fancy or elderly enough. Information I'm requesting on the subject's interestingness are made all the better when she's tough.
True, often quite dominion, it's a general opinion that your daughter would be longer when she's tough.
Are you old enough to marry, do you think?
Oh, yes.
Won't you wait until you're 80 in the shade? There's a fascination frantic in a ruin that's romantic. Do you think you are sufficiently decayed?
To the matter that you mention, I have given some attention, and I think I am sufficiently decayed.
If that is so, sing Daddy Down Daddy, it's evidence, Daddy, our tastes are one. Away we go, and Daddy is married, or Cardinal is carried, his day is done. If that is so, sing Daddy Down Daddy, it's evidence, Daddy, our tastes are one. Away we go, and Daddy is married, or Cardinal is carried, his day is done. Sing Daddy Down Daddy, when Daddy is married, or Cardinal is carried, his day is done.
Good evening, good evening. We're starting the night out with a little dose of Gilbert and Sullivan, and I see the Weaver has loved that bit. My father was a baritone, had perfect pitch, and he had an album that I think we played until it wore out. Martin Green sings Gilbert and Sullivan, and I was probably the only 8-year-old on the block that knew all the words to the Modern Major General. most Americans aren't really as acquainted with Gilbert and Sullivan as the Brits are, as the UK, because culturally that was your bequest to us. Our bequest to the world was McDonald's, and please forgive us for that. But Gilbert and Sullivan, if you've never had a close look at Gilbert and Sullivan's, the libretto, they were actually brilliant, brilliant poets. The word combinations and the especially Modern Major General is a tongue twister. If you've never looked at their lyrics, I included a link to the lyrics in the Beauty and the Belle of the Blast, and I've quoted it a number of times, and every time I do, I get strange looks from people. My favorite quote is, "Are you old enough to marry? Do you think? Won't you wait until you're 80 in the shade?" And people don't understand it. So anyway, now that everyone's awake and confused, let's get started. The Gray, are you out there?
Hi, Bobby. How are you?
I'm fine. I'm just stirring the pot, you know, just confusing. One of my the iconic films, the Ghostbusters. I'm sure you've seen the Ghostbusters. Well, the second one actually has my favorite line. When they come, they've been in the pink goo in the sewer, and they go rushing into the restaurant where Bill Murray and Sigourney Weaver are sitting. And they start carrying on, and Bill Murray looks at him and says, guys, you're scaring the straight. I wanted to start the evening by scaring the straights. And I hear Weaver we have back there. Is my saucy Scottish flask back there?
Hello there, my dear. How you doing?
My darling. Oh, bless your heart. Thank you for joining us. You like the Gilbert and Sullivan, huh?
Oh, I've always loved Gilbert and Sullivan. They're so incredibly clever. And you know what? That particular one reminded me of Fascinating Aida.
Some of my favorites. My father told me that Martin Green was iconic for singing mm-hmm. Gilbert and Sullivan because he was. He was one of the few that could master the tongue twisting in Modern Major General. Mm-hmm. But if you look at some of the songs, and one of my favorites, and again I quote it, and people look at me like I'm quite mad. One of my favorites is a Nightmare Song,
uh-huh.
And I like love Unrequited robs me of my rest, love hopeless, love my ardent soul encumbers, love nightmare like. Lies heavy on me chest and weave with soul into my midnight slumbers. I mean, the lyrics are brilliant. Mm-hmm. I remember this from when I was like 8 years old. I used to sing along. My father would sing along with the record. I would sing along with my father.
Mm-hmm.
But there's the songs that they have, like The Beauty and the Belle of the Blast or mm-hmm. the Nightmare Song or Modern Major General. I mean, the lyrics are so clever.
Yes.
They're brilliant poetry. They mm-hmm. really are.
They are.
And I'm reminded of my freshman English teacher, Mr. Perlberg, who introduced me to the concept of lyrics, mm-hmm. song lyrics, actually being poetry.
Right.
And he had us examining Simon and Garfunkel's The Sounds of Silence without the music, mm-hmm. just reading it. Mm-hmm. And I have never been able to look at a song the same way since.
No.
Yes, damn you, Mr. Clover. Because you look at really, there's songs out there that are brilliant poetry.
Mm-hmm.
And I think Gilbert Sullivan, especially for the complexity of the rhyming and the vocabulary.
I agree.
It's just wonderful, wonderful stuff. So anyway, well, I'm glad you got a kick out of that. I was trying to figure out with all the women's images what I was going to put on for intro music, and that came to me earlier today, and I thought I'll have fun with that. So, are you old enough to marry, do you think? Won't you wait until you're 80 sitting in the shade? I think I'm sufficiently Kate.
So clever, so very clever.
It is. So, and guess who is our first poet up?
I have no idea.
Tell me. I'll give you a hint. She's my favorite Scot, and the world would not be the same without her, and her wonderful Scottish sassiness, and the images for the contest. This is in the U.S. This is Women's History Month,
mm-hmm.
and so I selected a woman artist who was doing women's images, and she was doing them in a very non-flattering way. I mean, she was looking at them very, very differently. As a matter of fact, if you scan the images, I believe there's several celebrities in there, one of which is Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to put those out for folks to look at, to think about the female image in a different way as an image of power. an image other than just decorative.
Yes, I like it.
A complexity of power. You know, you look at some of the characters in Shakespeare. I mean, look at Lady Macbeth. There's the Twisted Sister. Woo!
Yeah.
And Ophelia from Hamlet. I mean, that lady had serious issues. And the three witches from Hamlet, from Macbeth. You've got all kinds of women out there that are very powerful, and so I thought I wanted to offer that to our poets. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, not everybody was as inspired as you were, so I had to open it up to open poetry toward the end there. But I think we'll get the good, interesting pieces sprinkled in there, and I noticed that Bray, bless his heart, bless his Vancouver heart, tossed a piece in there, and I tossed one of my own in there. So without me babbling more than I already have, which has been 10 minutes worth, let's go ahead and start this off. And since you didn't give us a SoundCloud, I'm going to ask Ray to post Weaver's piece. It's the first one up, and let her inaugurate the tonight's program.
I feel honored.
Okay, you betcha. Here we go.
All right, and a one and a two.
A one, two, three. Okay, I can't do as well as Gilbert and Sullivan, so I'll just talk.
You do what you do best, darling.
Thank you, my dearest. Okay, here we go. I am woman, hear me roar. I have looked out from behind these eyes through a lifetime of change, good, bad, and diabolical. The path I've walked has been varied, thrilling, happy, out of control, boring, mad, and sad. I fought for equal pay for women while I trained young men who were paid twice as much as I was. Talked my way out of being raped thanks to articles all about making yourself seen as a person, not as a victim. I ran a technical team of 30 women and men aware of male resentment based, I think, on several things. Born of women, usually raised by women, this fostered a need to prove that women could no longer rule them. There is no battle of the sexes, merely women waiting for men to catch up. End poem.
Oh, I love that last two lines. The woman who's the queen of the closures. I love that. There is no battle of the sexes, merely women waiting for men to catch up. I had a female corporal working for. I was an admin officer. I had a female corporal working for me that had you find your favorite, you find a quote, and you print it, and you put it up on the wall somewhere around your desk, or you put it on your desk or somewhere. She had a quote up on the wall behind her that said, women, to be a woman Marine, you have to work twice as hard to be considered half as good. Fortunately, of course, being a woman, this is not difficult.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
She had that up on her behind her desk, and a couple of the male Marines objected to it. I said, what about that do you object to? I said, it's true.
Yeah.
I said, when you walked a mile in those moccasins, you have no basis for comparison. What inspired this piece here? It's just all the artwork?
Yes, it was the I was inspired by prompt 21, which I can't offhand remember exactly which one that is, but I know it was prompt 21, and something about that spoke to me about. I'm sorry, is anybody else hearing that awful noise? Because
yeah,
I've got.
Yeah, I hear it too.
Oh, it's terrible. Oh, you can't think while it's wobbling away in the background. Yes, it was prompt 21, but it was basically, I just came from nowhere. I just looked at the face of the prompt at 21, and she was laughing behind her hands with a sort of gleeful look, thinking, and I'm thinking, she knows something we don't know, with kind of thing I got, you know, from it. I thought, she's having fun. She's, you know, she's got it sussed out. She knows what's going on. So, and that's what it came from. And
yes.
That is my life. My life has been all of those things.
I see the physics formulas around it too.
Yes.
Yes. I love that. I saw that one, and I thought I knew that was going to speak to someone.
Yeah.
you're right. Thank you. Greg, what did you think of Weaver's piece?
Well, you did a fantastic read of it, Weaver. But, you know, the whole time you were reading it, I was picturing Rosie the Riveter, you know, that poster of her standing tall.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that's what it took me to, is that Rosie the Riveter type personality, you know, somebody who's leading the team and yet underpaid at the same time. So, I really enjoyed your second penultimate stanza where you say, born of woman, usually raised by woman, this fostered a need to prove that women could no longer rule them, right?
Mm-hmm.
The rebel against that would raise you. Yeah, fantastic, right? And a beautiful read.
Thank you so much, my dear. Thank you.
Yes, definitely. Mm-hmm. Now, it's funny you mentioned Rosie the Riveter. If you look it up in Wikipedia, you get a whole panoply of images. And the original Rosie the Riveter was a black woman, which
cool.
I find that fascinating. And she actually was riveting. They show women on the assembly lines in factories. And Norman Rockwell actually did put out also his version of the, if you look it up, of Rosie the Riveter, and it's fascinating because it was a cover of the Saturday Evening Post in 1943, and she's a rather robust woman. She's got forearms that look like my grandmother's. She's wearing all kinds of Union buttons. She's got a leather wrist cuff. She's got a riveting gun across her lap. She's eating lunch, but one of her feet is resting on a copy of Mein Kampf.
Ah,
which I thought brilliantly subtle.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have a copy of that. It's a first day cover in my I Love Me my I Love Me room. All military veterans have what we call an I Love Me room, which is basically all the awards and certificates and everything, and you've been given in plaques and what have you, and you put them all in one room so that way your family doesn't have to worry about them being in other places. Because you concentrated them all in one spot, and I mm-hmm. have her in my I Love Me room. It's interesting because you mentioned that, Gray, because I don't know if you realize it, but if you look at the history of women their place, their role in society, World War II was a seed change.
It was.
It was a seed change. That women never came. The men came back from combat, and very often the women were told, "Thank you very much. Now go home."
Mm-hmm.
And many of them said, "No, I'm sorry, but I've had a taste of what I can do, and I'm not going back to what I was." But if you think about it, if you look at the history of our countries. And I can't speak to the UK very much because I don't know too much about it, but in the development of the United States, especially the movement west, you saw wagon trains, you saw women driving wagons, Conestoga wagons, you saw women felling trees. Building communities. I mean, these were pioneer women who, they didn't sit around listening to the radio and eating bonbons, mostly because there was no radio. These were rugged women. I mean, they're women who would raise a rifle and go out and cook and they'd hunt for dinner, you know, and we somehow lost track of that somewhere along the way and swathed women in crinoline and put them on pedestals and made them you know, fragile icons. And World War II brought them back to the table. I mean, if you want to read some really interesting things, read about the WASPs, who were the women who would, and they were not military. They were civilians who would ferry planes, military planes from location to location. And very often these women would get killed. And and they had actually had no civilian benefits. And the day the world ended, they came and they said, they told them, said, thank you, ladies, go home.
Oh,
and
my goodness.
Them, it took them decades to get recognized for the work that they did and the lives that were lost.
That's not surprising.
Look at Julia Child. She was a member of the OSS.
My goodness, me.
She worked as a spy during World War II.
Oh my God.
I have a
story about World War II that might interest you, given your background.
Yes.
Well, I started work at 15 and a half, and my first job was balancing gyroscopic gun sights that came out of Spitfires. Now, these gyroscopic gun sights were made by women in my factory, in the place I worked, in the middle of the war. Excuse me. And so they were coming back from the Spitfires, and we were rebalancing them and cleaning them up and sending them back out again. And it was a fabulous job. And I have pictures of these ladies sitting there building these gyroscopic gun sights, and they're it's fascinating.
Oh, I
loved it.
I would cherish those pictures. I would cherish them. Yes, and when I joined the Marine Corps, they put me in electronics, and I was the only woman in my class. But then I got told that during World War I was the only one in my class, and I got told that during World War II that they very often had women building these and doing the soldering because their hands they were much better at the fine work with the soldering than the men were. And it's amazing how it's taken us so long to come back. And to struggle for things that we had before that were taken away from us. But it's just – and poor Gray is sitting there in the background getting steamrolled by us two ladies here. So what are you thinking about, Gray? Listening to all this.
I'm just thinking about the lives that you lead to live, you know, very interesting.
I've never
worked in any of those jobs.
If you've ever been an anomaly, and I would say a man in typically a woman's job or a woman in a typically man's job, you find out how restrictive some people's thinking is and how they tend to be governed by stereotypes. Like when you hear the word nurse, what immediately comes to mind? A woman.
Mm-hmm.
Well, there are men out there who are nurses and are damn good at it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's interesting. I've always resented being labeled, being confined to a certain stereotypical description simply because that's where people think you belong.
Yeah.
And I said that probably one of the things that drove me to join the Marine Corps and then to stay in it was my father never told me I couldn't do something because I was a woman, because I was a girl. And when I started hearing that, I thought how absurd, you know, how specious that argument was. And I did my level best to rail against it. I mean, you want to watch something interesting. Watch what they did. They did an autobiography, a film on the Ruth Bader Ginsburg, and it's absolutely fascinating. Where she was single-handedly responsible for changing law that allowed women to have some of the equal rights as far as pay and opportunities. But the interesting thing about it is she did it. She launched it off of a case that involved a man. a man caring for his invalid mother.
Right.
And he was trying to get deductions on his income taxes, and because the government was defining a caregiver as a woman, he was not being allowed to do that. And she took his to the Supreme Court, and she won.
Good on her.
Yeah, it's fascinating to see what this woman did in her lifetime. Felicity Jones, I believe, played Ruth Bader Ginsburg and did a very fine job. But it is a fascinating film because it is all fact-based, and at the end of the film, they show Ruth Bader Ginsburg walking up the stairs to the Supreme Court. Yeah, and any of the gals that were out there that were pioneers like that are just, you know, they were made of very stern stuff because you got told no a lot. I used to say that the people, like, for 20 years, I was part salmon because I was swimming upstream the whole time.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
Now, from what you've said, I'm sure you do. You know, and you know what? We have other poetry. Let's give it some airtime. What do we got next? A co-pilot, Ray.
We have A Rainbow by Ben Hart.
I'll take that. I'll take Ben. Bless his heart. No pun intended, but it just kind of came out there. A Rainbow by Ben Hart. Bless his heart. Don't do this. Don't diminish me. What choice have I? I don't hate you for what you did to me. I hate you for what you're doing to yourself and using me as your weapon of self-destruction. 2. Smoke wreathed around your lips and scaled your face like phantom ivory, leaching the color from your eyes to paint daylight into dusk. Galloping trains shooting home applauded the untraveled horizon. Had you not looked back as you danced in open wounds, healing numb, they might have had just made it. 3. Peach picking in the summer haze. You only took pictures of me naked. 3 white egrets shot to pieces in the creek bed. They'll claim it was staged. A sick man's snow angels. You said it was a rainbow, but all I saw was pain. I still see your face where it shouldn't be. I burned the Polaroids in a circle around your gravestone. It didn't set me free. I hate telling you I told you so, but the fucking told you the world would end this way, a quiet panic, an unsubstantial death. They just never fucking listen. I only asked you to honor my truth, to bury it in a good place, where it could not live. How monstrous of me. If you must lose me, don't lie or just leave. Grow pair and scream at me if you have to. Let me see you rip it apart. Something good that I believe in it. See if I feel it. Don't wander too far from your heart, my dear. They might all forget your name, though not those eyes, I bet. Even dim cannot expel them from the minds of men, and probably women aplenty too. Fools, perhaps. Some fleeting, some devout, but I suppose you'll just do without. You'll just close your eyes and let the night win, and spare the wolves their last mercy for another exile into silence. What a waste of a beautiful life. What a waste of mine. End poem.
Beautiful.
Excellent read,
well,
Bobby. What are your thoughts?
Thank you.
Weaver.
Yes, excellent read, Bobby. Excellent. This is and this is an excellent poem. I think his work is fabulous anyway, but this... Oh, there was so much emotion in this one. There was so much,
yes.
You know, I'm trying to explain to you that you're ruining everything. Please stop it. Think, stop and think. And I love that. I love the whole thing about you know, I hate telling you I told you so, but I fucking told you the world would end this way. And I like that. I like the fact that he's raw and real in this, because this does call for people having a good swear at the way things are going. I think especially in your country at the moment.
Death bomb always does wonders.
Oh, God, yes, I know. My God, yeah. So I thought he did an excellent job, and thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Yes, I agree. I think this is usually Ben somehow insinuates, usually references to faith or religion or something in his pieces, which I don't object to because he does them in a non-proselytizing way. They're very subtle introductions. But there wasn't that in here. There was just a very raw, visceral emotionality. I love the second piece. Smoke wreathed around your lips and scaled your face like phantom ivy, leaching the color from your eyes to paint daylight into dusk. Had you not looked back as you danced in open wounds, healing numb, they might just have made it. I mean, just there's something so moving about that, especially that one stanza, the visual imagery, smoke wreathed around your lips and scaled your face like phantom ivy. I just think that is beautiful. This has got to be, I think, and he writes some damn fine poetry. This has got to be one of the best things he's ever written, I think. That's just Breeden's opinion, which is worth all six letters of my last name. So, this is a tremendous piece of the very, like you said, very emotional. Gray, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, this is a powerful piece on the emotion that comes through in a relationship and the giving and the taking. And I only ask you to honor my truth, to bury it in a good place where at one you cannot live. How monstrous of me. If you must lose me, don't lie or just leave. Roll a pair and scream at me if you have to. Let me see you rip apart something good that I believed in. See if I feel it. You know, that's what you want. You want confrontation. You don't want it to walk away in silence. And I don't know. It's just a powerful emotive right on the subject of love and all that comes with it. Beautiful, right?
I agree.
You did a great read.
I agree. Thank you. Ben's a challenge. Ben's a challenge. He's stream of consciousness or stream of unconsciousness. But no, he reads very colloquially, but there's a lot of emotion in it, and I really enjoy this one because he really laid it bare in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, who's next?
All right, let's get to the group here. The list. All right, so next we have Athanasia. I will close up to the group.
Okay. Oh, Fabiana.
Challenge Her Gaze by Athanasia. Athanasia. Yeah, Athanasia.
There you go. Dive in.
Challenge Her Gaze by Athanasia. Steady gaze of the scrupulous, unrelenting in ideals. Determined to spur change in action and inspiration. A look reminds what you know, urges you to stand, calls you to a cause. Eyes carry accusatory hope. She knows you can do as she does. She believes in your power. Her face challenges you to fulfill potential. End poem.
Well done, sir. Well done. Weaver, your thoughts, please.
This is, again, we seem to be getting, you seem to have produced different emotions and feelings from the writers that we're used to seeing on these different contests. This definitely has brought out, which I love. It that's what we're looking for. You know, you can get yourself into a point where you more or less just bounce along with the same rhythm, you know, and don't do much else because that's what you're happy with and what gets you results. But this, again, she's gone out, and I'm not going to use the buzzwords. I hate buzzwords. She has decided to do something different, and she's talking to you and telling you more or less what she feels about what's happening. Steady gaze of the scrupulous, unrelenting in ideals, determined to spur change in action and inspiration. That's it. That's the cry, the warrior's cry. And that will be into battle now, by golly. And I like that a lot.
Yeah.
Very well done. She has really knocked it out of the park, as they say. Oh, no, buzzword. No. Yeah. Well done. Well done.
A cliche. Cliche alert just went off.
Oh, no. I've actually written a poem about cliches. I am the queen of cliches. So, yeah.
My late partner, because I think you've got a sampling of how my mind works, mm-hmm. poor thing. I might tend to make some rather puzzling or hard to discern linkages. And it's just the way my mind works. And when after Tony, my late partner, got used to that, I used to anticipating that, I would make a I'd make a comment, and he'd go, obscure reference warning, obscure reference warning.
Wonderful. I love that. Clever.
He would do it, obscure reference warning.
And he
would question me, and he'd say, where did that come from? Mm-hmm. And I would explain the linkages to him. Sometimes I see something that sets off another thought, that sets off another thought, and there I am down the rabbit hole, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Or as I said, Breeden's Guided Tourist from Tangent Land.
Cool.
Well read, Gray. What did you think of that?
I liked it. You know, it reminded me of a certain look my mom gives me, a stern, you know, look. That's what it reminds me of. The look reminds what you know, urges you to stand, calls you to a cause, eyes carry accusatory hope. Yeah, that describes my mom all over.
The look.
I love you, Mom. Yeah.
I love it.
I mean, if it wasn't for my mom, you know, I'd be living under a bridge, I guess.
But, in a large appliance box?
Yeah, exactly.
That's my locale of choice. There are some times when I'd rather be in a large appliance box than an underpass, you know? Is mom still around?
Is mom still around?
Oh, bless your heart. Good for you.
Yeah.
Good for you. I like that last stanza. She knows you can do as she does. She believes in your power. Her face challenges you to fulfill potential. That's a great stanza right there. And I mean, she's basically, if you look at the all 40 plus prompts there, they're all very, very focused. They all look like they're all challenging you to do your best. There's no half measures in there. There's women who are very determined, who have seen the barriers and have surmounted them, haven't let them stop them, and that's what I was looking for. I'll probably in the next contest go for something a bit more regal, but these were and the colors, especially the color palette that this artist uses, very stark, the word just went right past my eyes and I didn't catch it. Almost dissonant, color palettes, contrasting colors that are almost startling in the way that they're. And if you look at there's another artist, her name is Bisa Butler. I featured her in a contest a couple of years ago. She actually does textile art. She does quilts, and she is a black woman who does she does quilts of black history and black families and black communities. But she does a similar thing with her color choices, her color palettes. She doesn't go for your characteristically flesh tones. She'll go for purple or green or blue or something. But goddamn, she makes it work. And this the artist is the same way. She makes it work.
Mm-hmm.
You look past the color, and the color palettes, I think, are more of an awakening. She's taken them out of the category of portraits and put them into a revelation.
Mm-hmm. I think I can see our late queen there as well. It looks like our late queen here, our UK, Her Majesty. It's there on the left-hand side, 1, 2, 3 down.
My mother was born the same year.
Oh, right.
You just awakened a long dormant memory. Your late queen,
mm-hmm.
Back in 1959, visited the U.S. and came to Chicago,
wow.
where I grew up. And my grandmother made a point of taking me downtown. And she had a motorcade going to, I can't remember what street it was. It was near the lake. But my grandmother and I were my grandmother was trying. I was 6 years old, and so I was about as big as a minute, and I couldn't see anything because I was surrounded by adults, and my grandmother kept trying to lift me up, and they hadn't come by yet, but she was an opener back in the '50s, you know, before everything went to hell in a handbasket. She was in an open car, but. My grandmother kept trying to lift me up, and this policeman, the Chicago policeman, saw my grandmother try, and he says, come here, missus. He brought my grandmother and me forward, and when the queen went by, he picked me up.
Wow.
He picked me up, and I had a little Union Jack in my hand, and I was waving the Union Jack, and I waved, and I got to see Queen Elizabeth. I got to see Her Majesty when she came to Chicago in 1959, and then the policeman put me down on the curb, and my grandmother says, go give him a kiss. So I ran over, and I gave him a big kiss on the cheek.
Oh, lovely.
I never forgot that. I hadn't thought of that, but I had seen the Queen.
Yeah, I saw her. I just put up on the board. When I lived in Malta, she came to visit, and she stayed there for a while, and it was I used a Liberty boat that she had been on to take me to Lido.
The Liberty ships.
Little Liberty boat.
People don't know the history behind the Liberty ships and how quickly they were constructed and how much they filled a desperate need. For seagoing vessels during the war. I mean, there is so much World War II history. I'm fascinated by it and how things could have gone so differently because you good people were losing the war in the Atlantic. You were losing the war in the Atlantic until the HMS Bulldog caught the U-110. And the skipper had the courage to go aboard the submarine because he knew that they would lay booby traps to scuttle it.
Yeah.
The Germans would lay booby traps. But the skipper and the Bulldog, the HMS Bulldog, went and got not only the Enigma machine, but 30 days worth of code keys. And that was one of the things that helped. That was one of the things that helped turn the tide in the Atlantic War. That and the Turing machine, Alan Turing and his Turing machine, and the good folks at Bletchley Park.
Oh, amazing. That just fascinates me. And the different things they did. They had the poor dead guy in the sea. He was a decoy, or he had papers on him.
Oh, that was Operation Mincemeat. That was Operation Mincemeat. The man who never was.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Fascinating. Yeah, and poor Gray's brought back there going, what the hell are they talking about? Operation Mincemeat, for the folks that are listening that don't know their World War II history, this was the Brits were superior at disinformation. They were just stars. They were stellar at disinformation, and they came up with a plan to put false documentation on a dead on a cadaver, but the man had to have died a certain way. He had to have died by drowning. So they found a man in one of their hospitals that had died of pneumonia, and he couldn't have any family. His father released him to the government without knowing why, and they dressed him up like a British naval officer, and they put an attaché case. They handcuffed him to his wrist, mm-hmm. and they put him on a submarine, and they released him off the coast of Portugal, and they let the tide carry him in, knowing that the Germans had agents there that would take the documentation and examine it. And I mean the level of detail, to the point where they actually had pictures of a girl and love letters and theater tickets. And receipts for tailoring the Germans bought it, mm-hmm. and that was the disinformation that made them think that D-Day was going to be at Calais instead of Normandy.
Amazing!
Isn't
so
that
clever.
Fascinating? Netflix. Actually, there was a film with Clifton Webb and Stephen Boyd. And Gloria Graham in the 1950s called The Man Who Never Was.
Mm-hmm.
But there was also Netflix, Colin Firth, I can't remember the other actors, but Colin Firth did a Netflix film, and it's called Operation Mincemeat.
I must find that.
Oh, yes. And it is very, very good because it shows you everything they went through.
Mm-hmm.
To get, because they had to sell the Admiralty on it, and it was amazing. And if you want to, and I'll give you some other information later on. I'll send you some. But there was an agent. The man was Portuguese. He wanted to work for the British. He wanted to work for British intelligence, and British intelligence wouldn't have him. He came up with his own spy network, all fictitious. He had the German government convinced they had 26 agents in London report, and he'd get his information from the newspapers.
Wow!
And his name came so close that the British government had to reel him in and say, "We better have you working for us." Because, you know, you're getting too close to the truth. And his nickname was Garbo. His name was Garbo.
Mm-hmm.
And he ended up actually retiring in Brazil or Argentina. I think Brazil. But he was the only person ever to have won a medal from the British government. He got the Queen's, what is it, the Victoria Cross.
Mm-hmm.
The British government, and he got the Iron Cross from the German government because they thought he was working for them.
That's just completely wonderful.
I'll send that link to you. It's fascinating.
Please.
And the way it got tracked down was that a reporter from the Washington Post was doing a research article on World War II, and he kept running up against Garbo, 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 and they nicknamed him Garbo because they said he was the best actor they'd ever met. He created this entire fictitious spy network, and he had the German government convinced they had agents in London. And there were these people, 26 agents in London, and they had no one.
That is just, you know, clever.
I'll send that to you. That
Please
is
do.
Fascinating. But it was a Washington Post reporter who tracked him down, and because he was still classified, even in the 70s, he was still classified. And he finally tracked it down, and he was able to find the man and interview him. Because he had retired. He retired in South America. So anyway, now that we're back from the day, I warned you about Breeden's Tangent Land. Don't get me started on World War II. So okay, now we're back. I shouldn't drink before these programs. I really shouldn't. Okay, who we got next?
So we have Through the Eyes of Womanness by Way Down Upon Joy.
Okay, let's open that up and take a look at it. And this picture. Weaver, do you feel up to it?
Yes, of course. I love breathing.
Thank you.
My pleasure. Through the Eyes of Womanness. I've got it. Just give me a moment to get it opened. There we are. Oh, yes, that is. I see what you mean about her color palette. Wow.
Yes.
That is vibrant, but muted, if you know what I mean. It's just, it could have been garish, but is garish a word? Anyway, it could have been.
Yes.
It's beautifully done. Right. So Through the Eyes of Womanness. I love the title. Right. I see you seeing silently while sensing what that means. I watch you waiting patiently while working out unseen. I picture past purely preferring purer scenes. I sense your signs. Sapiently is a word I don't know what womanliness means. Okay, I'll do it again. I sense your signs sapiently with womanlessly means. That's a tongue twister I ever saw one, and beautifully done. That is so clever. I don't usually get tripped up, but by golly, that's good. Okay, sorry.
Well done. Well read. Gray, kick us off, please.
Yeah, I liked her word invention, womanness, womansly, you know.
Womanliness,
but,
yeah.
I don't know. I thought she captured the picture quite beautifully. I mean, I see you seeing silently while sensing what that means. I watch you waiting patiently while working out unseen. I picture past purely. Preferring pure scenes, I sense your signs sapiently with womanly means. Beautiful.
Yes.
I really enjoyed her play on words there. Great job.
It's a great, it's,
a great
it is, it's a great, yes, and a great, it's a great brevity. I mean, there's a lot being said here in just 3, 6, 9, 12 lines. And just a what I call an economical right, Way Down Upon Joy. And I haven't seen her entries in a while. I'm glad to see her in here. And the fact that she, when I posted this picture, it seemed to be different from all of the others. It seemed, although it had that vibrant palette, it was a bit softer than the others. The others are very, very dynamic, very, very dark. This one's a bit more soft. There's a couple of them of older women that are a bit softer, but I sense sure signs sapiently with womanliness means. Beautiful subtlety in this. I picture past purely preferred purer scenes. The play on words here and the alliteration is nicely done. So Gray, Weaver, you two look so much alike. I get you confused.
Yeah.
And I'm sorted lies. Weaver, what you read it? What did you think?
I was to say I was impressed is being very mild about it, because I thought those first two stanzas were they just hit me. I thought it was so clever. And it tripped beautifully off the tongue. I see you seeing sanity or sensing what that means. That there is no effort in that. That's not being jumbled into, you know, just to impress. That's there because it's bright. It's the way it should be. And then I watch you waiting patiently while working out unseen.
That's
just so clever. I mean, that is,
you're right. It's very melodic.
Beautiful. I liked it a lot, and I think I'm very impressed by that. Thank you so much. Way Down Upon Joy. Wonderful.
Yes, really. No, that's that. I agree. It says a lot in a few words. Something I've never been able to master. I think my father used to say he used to claim I was vaccinated with a phonograph needle. Yeah, I can't say that now because the obscure warning reference would go off.
Yep.
Okay. All right. Who we got next, please, sir?
Sorry, just one second. I got to get to the
Post here. Is Robbie still with us, or has he sailed off for parts unknown?
Yeah, I think he has.
Oh, okay. I didn't even get to tuck him in.
So we have All in a Day's Work, her version, by Aggie.
Aggie, yeah. Okay, let's open that up and see what it looks like. Okay, All in a Day's Work, her version. Now, it seemed like the artwork in this particular contest was not the stimulus that the last contest was, so I opened it up a couple of days ago to pre-writes. Because I figured, certainly, for women's faces, there would be some out there that would be applicable, and I think this is one of them. So AG gave us this. A muse's work is surely never done, imbuing thankless poets with their sparks. She's out there hustling, always on the run, in search of ever wittier remarks. Her work-life balance, please don't even start. Collapsing on the couch, a glass of red. But mind still spinning tries to do her part for those whose only goal is to be read. And they'll put acknowledgments and such with platitudes like package deal we share. Then frowning say, you do protest too much if any shred of fame should fall on her. You won't hear her complain because what's the use? She longs to be the poet, not the muse. End poem. Wow.
Yeah.
Great read, Bobby.
Thank you.
What are your thoughts,
Gray? There's a competition to be polite here.
Well, right. I see.
Go ahead, Weaver.
Okay. I thought another one is just beautifully done. And I can imagine, can you imagine? I mean, I have lived the life of a girl in a man's world. I'm always the only woman in my workplace. Always have been, because I started with electronics. It was like my passion. So I understand exactly how that must feel. Excuse me a second. I've got such a tickly throat. One moment. So I can understand this. You know, you are only there to titillate. You're only there to make the juices run. You're only there to make yourself interesting so that they have something to work around.
Decorative.
So I can understand why you would start to feel, I did, why you start to feel, what is the point? But then, you know, I'm doing my all and getting nothing back. I don't want to be the person that makes you feel interesting or makes you think of something you want to write about. I want to be the poet, not the muse. And I thought that was perfect. Such a, All in a Day's Work, her version. Now makes complete sense.
Get thee behind me, lass, because I spent 20 years buttoning left over right.
I
dressed in men's clothes. Mm-hmm. I remember one time I'd sprained my ankle. I was in a cast. And I had to go cripping into the dispensary, and I came into the hospital and I didn't realize I'm coming in the dependent entrance, and there was this young dependent wife with her son sitting on the floor, and he was playing, and I went, and I was in, this was winter time, so I'm in a field jacket and my cover's on, and I'm on crutches, and I'm in my camouflage utilities, and I go, and he stops whatever he's doing, he looks at me, and he watches me go past, and then he looks up at his mother, and in his best stage whisper, he says, "Look, Mommy, he hurt his leg." Mommy, very chagrined, she looks at me, she says, no, honey, that's a lady. And I said, "That's okay, I know the difference."
Oh, perfect.
And I used to get that all the time. I mean, because the job I had had me in utilities most of the time, because it was I was working the communications maintenance. We're fixing things, so we're getting dirty, and so very often, one of the other officers would, his wife would come by with their child, and they'd be holding the child, and the officer would be introducing the family around, you know, and the child would, I'd say hello, and the child would give me a look like, "Looks like daddy, sounds like mommy, I'm confused."
Oh, I can understand that so much.
I didn't care. And even sometimes the young troops would say "sir" instead of "ma'am," and it was funny to watch them stumbling all over. I said, "Look," I said, "it's respect. You got the gender wrong this time. You get it right next time." I said, "I know the difference. That's all that matters."
I used to have the same thing exactly when I was on my motorbike. I would get off it and take my helmet off, and of course I had really long curly hair in those days, and I had this great big leather jacket on with the big dragon on the back, and I took off
my
helmet.
Oh my God! I give a pick of pretty nothings to see that picture.
Oh, it was hilarious. Their faces were just a picture. It was worth it. And the thing is, I can't tell my left from my right, so I am incredibly dangerous on the road. So one of the guys painted on my helmet two dopeys, you know, like seven dwarfs, two dopeys, and one said left and one had right. And I said, I can't see them. What bloody good is that to me? But it made everybody laugh. It was hilarious because they all knew my problem. Oh, dear, those were the days.
Oh, that's funny.
That's funny.
I only had occasion to drive on the wrong side, as we Americans put it. When I was stationed in Okinawa, they drive on the left side,
right.
And all their vehicles had the right to have the steering wheel on the right side of the vehicle,
mm-hmm.
And so we were there for a year. I was married at the time, so we bought a car, and it was funny. We had a drill that worked really well. Anytime we were at a corner, he was usually driving, and it was a stick, so you're shifting with your left hand, and anytime we'd go around the corner, the passenger would holler, "Left side, left side, left side."
Yeah. Oh, Jamie.
It's funny because when I came back from Okinawa, I came back to the 29 Palms, California, and I was in my Jeep, and I was driving down an access road, and I found myself driving down the left side of the road.
Of course. It's so hard.
I was really glad no one was in the other direction.
Oh, man, it happened.
Oh,
you could see the panic. You could see the panic in their faces as they're coming toward you, going, "Why are you on my side of the road?
Why are you on
my side
of the road?" Yeah.
I love that. The faces are panic-stricken. Yeah, cool stuff.
It's quite startling. And boy, Gray is ahead of us. Oh, Robbie's back. Hey, Robbie, thank you for coming back. Okay, we got whiplashes. Let's see. I'll take this one. There's also a film out there by Miles Teller and J.K. Perkins, and he won an Academy Award for Best Actor in that, and it's about a student, a music student who plays drums. And J.K. Perkins, is it Perkins? I'm probably getting the last name wrong.
He plays the music teacher, and he's an absolute tyrant. He's an absolute tyrant. The name of the film is called Whiplash.
Yeah, I watched it.
He does. You know, there's a man who's a really versatile actor because he plays an absolute tyrant. I mean, he plays an SOB in Whiplash. And yet, if you've watched, there's another film called Rewrite with mm-hmm. Hugh Grant. And J.K. Perkins plays in. He plays a teacher who is supposed to be a retired Marine, but he's got his wife and three daughters. And anytime he starts talking about his family, he starts crying.
Oh. Oh dear.
He also plays a Treasury agent in The Accountant. I mean, this guy is really a tremendous character actor. He's quite a chameleon. But he had been in Whiplash. He made you hate him.
Yep.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. Yeah, and I think it's kind of sexy. Anyway, we got Kenneth Perkins with Whiplashes. Why must it be those eyes? I scrolled through the prompts at least a dozen times. Simply looking to be inspired, finding myself mesmerized, the hypnotic draw of those two eyes. Staring through my cell phone screen divided by both space and time, her deep space gaze so far reaching. It must be something psychic, some psychic trick, a vampiric beauty's unmatched wit, transfixing this blood-filled knit. Hidden behind her blood-stained lips, oxygen-imbued and reflectionless, an enamel-rich, life-giving kiss. Knowing at a glance, I have nothing to offer, the only laudable offering my body's preferring. Even if after a dictionary's count of words of caution, an obtruse amount escape was never even an option. Drawn across lines again and again, my pen, my poem, my mind, my time, always back to those two eyes. Orange auras encircling, swirling, round, soulful black holes. Existence, resistant, event horizons. Information inconsolably lost in their gravitas direction. All matters dissolved by their poignant detection. End poem.
Wonderful read, Bobby. And what are your thoughts, Weaver?
Yes, this is a little dream of a piece of poetry. There's so much hidden in here. It's not, you know, immediately, it's not bam, bam, bam kind of thing. You need to look at it and think about it. But we have simply looking to be inspired, finding myself mesmerized, the hypnotic draw of those two eyes. And that, you know, is testament to the way this person feels. He can actually allow himself to be more or less seduced by these hypnotic eyes. And then we have, I love that, the psychic trick of vampiric beauty's unmatched wit, transfixing, I like this, transfixing this blood-filled knit. Oh, that is just so
cool.
That is good.
Yeah.
That is very good. I really enjoyed this a lot. And a great read, by the way. It gave a lot to the poem as well. But yeah.
Thank you.
Very nice. Thank you so much for sharing that with us, Kenneth, Mr. Perkins.
Yes, really. Yeah. A lot of emotion, a lot said in that. What did you think, Ray?
Yeah, you know, I agree with it too. I mean, I agree with you both. It was a fabulous write. I love the search for the connection and the being hypnotized by the eyes, you know, and connecting to that. It was wonderful. You did a great read of it too, Bobby.
Thank you. He's right, though. I mean, if you look at all of those prompts, well, they're all faces, obviously. I mean, but the eyes are very they're transfixing, they're hypnotic almost sometimes, very intense, in the way that they're portrayed and the way that they're painted by this artist. So I think he really, really captured the he conveyed the emotions of the prompt very well, very well interpreted. So nicely done. Thank you, Mr. Perkins. Okay, whoever else? What we got next?
All right. Next we have David Phillip Island, and it's called One of the Boys. So I'll post that to the group.
Okay. And I'm still refreshing. Still waiting for it to come back.
There we go. It is there.
Not there yet. There it is.
It should be.
Okay. So, all righty. We have One of the Boys. Weaver, do you feel like reading this for us, dear?
Yeah, of course. No problem. Happy to.
Okie dokie.
Okie dokie dokie. Right. Serious face on. David Phillip Island, I'm going in. One of the Boys. I bought her a toolbox. That's what I got. I got a lovely little blue toolbox for myself. Anyway, I bought her a toolbox for the back of the truck. I gave her a hard drive and a run of good luck. Now she can strip down the T-bird as fast as a guy, but I just want to kiss my single life goodbye. One of the Boys. I bought her a Marshall with jack plugs and things. I bought her a Fender and a D'Ardo strings. Now she can rattle and riff, demolish a show, but all I want is a quiet little place to go. One of the Boys. She struts like a girl in her leather and curls. It's a rock and roll lifestyle of lipstick and curls. She's down with the best, and we're taking bets. But where this goes could end up being a hot, hot mess. One of the Boys. I want to settle, but she wants to shock. I want some babies, but she wants to rock. I want a white dress and a honeymoon sweets, but she wants to boogie under the sheets. One of the Boys. When the temperature soars, she's a heat-seeking missile. And the guys in the bleachers holler and whistle. She knows how to ride those skyscraper heels. She's my rock and roll baby. Do you know how that feels? One of the Boys. I wanted a kitty cat. I got me a lion. I wanted a buddy, a shoulder to cry on. I wanted a soulmate. I got me a diva. Pushes all the limits. She's an overachiever. One of the Boys. I bought her a toolbox for the back of the truck. I gave her a hard drive and a run of good luck. Now she can angle and grind as fast as a guy. And I just want to kiss my single life goodbye. One of the Boys. End poem.
Well done.
Great read, Weaver.
Thank you. Yeah. And that's to prompt 42. Now you got me curious. So something very often people do multiple prompts. I know I do. But this one's just got the one prompt. So I'm trying to scroll up to see which one. 42 is three more. We go ahead down. I thought the title was interesting because the title was actually from the artist. 42. Oh, she. it's the one that's very feminine. It's the last prompt, and she's wearing. She looks like almost like Daisy Buchanan.
Yeah.
She's got the white hat. And the pearls, and the white dress, and yet he's calling her one of the boys, which I thought was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, Gray, what were your thoughts about this?
I enjoyed it. It had great flow. I liked the rhyme scheme in it. But I also like, you know, that she's one of the boys, you know, one of the boys, just one of the boys. And, you know, when a woman can hold her own as one of the boys, that's good stuff right there. And, you know, I just want to kiss my single life goodbye, one of the boys. You know, you marry somebody like that, quite honestly. So
yeah.
I thought it was brilliant,
yeah.
And you did an excellent job reading it, Weaver.
Thank you.
Well, you read it. Thank you. Great comment. You read it, dear. What did you think?
I loved it. I just loved it. I just thought... Again, it's got that lovely it's a lyrical bounce and sweep of it. You know, it's a joy to read something like this because it's got a life. There's a life in there. This is not just a flat piece of writing. This is, you know, and I do like a connecting constant, where you have that same line at the end of each one. It brings
the refrain. Yeah, the refrain.
I like it so much. It can be overdone.
I do too.
But it's the same as alliteration can be overdone, but sometimes it's just perfect. And this was just, I liked it so much. And that last, again, you see the same, this more or less the same ending as beginning, except for a couple of different lines on it, which is also great because, again, it centers you into the poem itself and allows you to assimilate it. I liked it. I really did. So it was very clever.
I do too. Because he's able to convey both, she's got two facets to her. I mean, she's got two sides. She can be as feminine as she wants, but she can be as strong as she wants and hold her. And I think you can identify with this, but I know I certainly can't.
Yeah.
I've got more male friends who have told me, married male friends, who have told me that they can talk to me like they can't talk to another guy and like they can't talk to their wife.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that I'm honored by that, but I find it a sad testimony to the fact that they can't communicate with other men because the men can't understand how they feel, and they can't talk to their wives because their wives are going to judge them.
Yep.
And so I've got guys coming to me and telling me things that I know they don't tell anybody else.
Mm-hmm.
I almost feel like I sometimes feel like a confessional, but I'm honored by the fact that they view me as non-judgmental and being grounded enough to understand what they're saying, but having enough emotion to understand how they feel.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that's a delicate dance. I've told people most. Matter of fact, one time I was at an engineering meeting, and we were talking about gender, and I looked at the guys and I said, "Look, I said I've got it better than you, and they're not a figure. I said I'm standing here in a pantsuit. I said, but if I wanted to, just as easily, I could go up to my room and put on a skirt."
Mm-hmm.
I said I have the best of both worlds. I can dress in a dress with impunity. Can you?
Exactly. Lovely pen of percent. Yes. Exactly. Exactly.
They looked at me and said, "No." I said, "Okay, my point." Mm-hmm. And very often, it's a difficult road to hoe. I think you and I realize, and mm-hmm. I think we have the best of both worlds because we can be strong, but we can also be emotional. And we're not judged as harshly by some men. Although if you look at films, if you look at just social habits, there's a lot more hugging going on with men than there used to be.
Yeah.
At least. But that was a very European thing. European men would hug each other. American men wouldn't. Mm-hmm. They'd shake hands.
Yeah.
Because of that male mystique. Of, you know, you want to be considered mm-hmm. a real. Real men don't cry, and real men don't.
Yeah.
Other assorted bullshit.
I find it very difficult. You know, the European way of kissing on the cheek either once or twice. I can't. I don't want. I just want to shake your hand. I do not want to be get up close and personal with you. Honestly, God, I cannot do it. I find it so uncomfortable. Don't get that
really?
Close to me. Yeah, I don't understand it. Honestly, because I'm a hugger. I will hug people, but
that's the Brit in you though. Because I grew up with a Polish family. My grandmother's Polish, mm-hmm. So we're hugging and kissing all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you look at the Slavs, they're hugging and kissing all over the place. So I got used to that. You know, hugging and kissing my dad and my mom and my grandma. Mm-hmm. You know, but I remember my dad. I was an only child. And my dad was just so delighted that he had a daughter because he wanted a little girl. And he had this enormous armchair with an ottoman, a big poof that went with it. And mm-hmm. he would stretch out in that. And when I was little, He'd invite me to climb up in there with him. And he put his big, big arms around me, and I'd sit in his lap, and I'd fall asleep. And I remember one evening he said, "Do you want to come sit in my lap?" And I said, "No." And he got this hurt look on his face. He said, "Why not?" And I looked at him, I said, "You make me fall asleep."
Oh.
Yeah. And he looked at me. He goes, "Oh, okay." He said, "I promise I won't make you fall asleep this time, okay?" I said, "Okay." And, of course, I fell asleep.
That's lovely.
Yeah, he just – one of my favorite photographs of him – well, one of my favorite childhood photographs is – my father in his pajama bottoms. He's in his and he's bare chested. He's sitting in his big armchair, and his arms are dangling off to the sides. Off the arms of they're dangling off to the sides, and he's got his legs stretched out on the ottoman. They're stretched out and laying face down on his legs is me. I think I must have been 8 or 9 months old. Legs and arms dangling off the sides of his, and I'm sound asleep, and we're both of us sound asleep.
Oh my goodness, that must have been so comfortable for you. Just
yeah,
went to sleep.
And just, yeah, but that was one of my favorite pictures, because my father was never hung up on, you know, not showing that he had emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And I admired him for the fact that, and there was no doubt in my mind, I would consider my father, I would define him as a man's man.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very, very masculine, but still never a hesitation to show that he had feelings.
That's
matter
lovely.
Of fact, when I was going through boot camp, my parents came to see my graduation. And they were the first set of parents to show up. And I was recruit leader, which was kind of like the liaison between the drill instructor and the platoon. So I was the one that would form them up for chow, and I was the one that would march them to classes and march them to the chow hall and what have you. And so my parents had shown up and a couple days before graduation, and so we're getting ready to go to dinner. So I fell the platoon on my platoon. I fell the platoon out in the street. And I formed them up, and I marched them to the chow hall, which was all of about 100 yards. And my mother told me later, she looked over at my father, and my father had tears in his eyes.
Oh, so lovely.
Because he was so proud.
Yeah.
Proud, yeah. Yeah. And there was always that bond between – and I think this is – when I read one of the boys, this is the same kind of girl who – is secure in her femininity, but has no compunctions about being strong.
Yeah,
about being
I like
having
that.
A strong side. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Gray, did I ask you for your comments about this?
Yes, you did.
Okay, I'd want to overlook you. I mean, it seems like Weaver and I have been. Commandeering the show tonight, you know, you've been relegated to the background, and you're sitting on the piano bench turning the pages.
Yeah. Well, get in there, Gray. Get in there, man.
Get in there, Gray. Get in there. Gray. Okay.
No.
Well, he's going to poke the next poem for us. Oh, resilience are us, Jenny the Deep. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Okay. I'll pull this one. I think this needs a feminine voice. Resilient Are Us Women by Jenny the Deep. Pulling that verbal metallic ivory-encrusted trigger, she ends the war between men and women. Battle of the sexes going on for ages, now over. With the whip of her tongue, she humbled men. Not all women are praised, heroes with no names. Some are law enforcement stopping a bank robber. Others are fire chiefs trained at putting out flames. Dreams of many ignored by gender, but has honor. Heroes come in all shapes and sizes. Moms who raise respectable children. Daughters who help their mom in disguises. Women not needing credit or instant gratification. Females are stronger than some fail to realize.
It takes bravery and resilience to get up again. We help fight back against inequality, gender bias, proving time and again we can do what men can. Scratching and clawing off the real bad guy, females do everything in this world to survive. We are women, rough and tough, we roar as a sisterhood, stand as one, no help if we lie. End poem.
Great read, Bobby. And what did you think, Weaver?
This is a pre-write, but it's very fitting.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, it sure is.
It's a slight difference for Jenny. This one, I think, it's another one of those bringing out things that you wouldn't perhaps normally think about or even talk about. But here we have the battle of the sexes, and we all know about, and women can bring a man down just by the whip of their tongue. We've seen that happen umpteen times. Who was it? Wasn't Oscar Wilde, was it? Is that Oscar Wilde? Somebody had said to him, "Sir, you are drunk." And he replied to the lady.
That's Churchill.
Was it Churchill? Yes, I knew it was.
It was Churchill.
I'm not good with names. And he said, "And yes, but tomorrow I'll be sober. You'll still be ugly." Love it.
Yeah.
And that's a whip. So yes, this is good. I like it. Heroes come in all shapes and sizes. Moms who raise respectable children. It's true, as I said before, that women do have that power. Women are the ones who raise the future generations to be, respectable and good and as much as they can. So yes, females are strong. Of course they are. They have to be. We've got no choice most of the time. And a lot of the time we are left on our own to get on with it. I was a single mother for a while. And it's not an easy thing. It wasn't an easy thing in those days, that's for sure. But yeah, so I do. I appreciate that. That's well done. Thank you for sharing that, Jenny.
The quote you were thinking of was a wartime speech by Churchill and one of the socialist MPs, Bessie Braddock, I think it was Lady Astor. She accused him of being disgustingly drunk. The prime minister responded, "My dear, you are ugly, and what's more, you are disgustingly ugly. But tomorrow, I shall be sober, and you shall still be disgustingly ugly."
I didn't know it had the word "disgustingly" in it. Wow,
that was vehement.
That was definitely vehement. He was obviously not pleased.
Yeah, that was yeah. Churchill and Lady Astor.
Yeah. She was another one, Lady Astor, a lady to be reckoned with. But yeah, well done. Yeah, I like that. I love quotations anyway. I'm terrible for that. I do love them. Other people's clever words. Great fun.
Yeah, it was funny. I read an article when I was about 12 years old, and I wish I'd kept it. But it was in a magazine, and the title of the article I never forgot. It was the title was "Quiet, Please, While I Utter a Witticism," and it talked about how often we will think of exactly the right rejoinder, but we think of it two hours or 2 days later or 2 weeks later. But that time, it's all gone. It's done.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, quiet, please, while I utter witticism.
So I like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, great. What did you think of that piece?
I enjoyed it. I like the in-your-face, no backing down, fortitude. I enjoyed the title, Resilient Are Us Women, because, I mean, you sure are. I mean, my mom is the toughest woman I know. And, I've seen a lot of big bulldogs back down from her, We moved into a house when I was a kid, and it had been a previous clubhouse for a motorcycle gang. And, they left about a pound of cocaine in the house.
Oh my god!
That my mom found. So she put it down the toilet, and they showed up, and they're like, "We need you in." And she's like, "No, you're not coming in," and blah blah blah. But she backed these bikers off her door, and they lost out on a pound of cocaine that she had flushed down the toilet. So they flushed that down the toilet. Yeah. Yeah, so she's a little pit bull for sure.
Oh, really? Yeah. You know, you just reminded me of a story my grandmother told me. My grandmother was born in Krakow, Poland, and you didn't fuck with my grandmother. She was a tough lady, and when she married my grandfather and had my mother and my uncle, the block they lived on in Chicago, they lived in Chicago proper in the city. The block they lived on was mostly Irish, German, Italian, and you know they'd already climbed up the social ladder. The Irish had, and the Italian had, and the Germans were ahead, and so now we got the Poles at the bottom of the social ladder, and so they were the only Polish family on the block, and so the nasty names and what have you. And one day my grandmother told me the story. She said that someone took a trash can and dumped trash on their front porch. My grandmother lost it. She went into the house, and apparently my grandfather kept a pistol, a revolver. My grandmother grabs the pistol. She goes outside onto the front porch and fires a couple of shots into the air.
Wow.
Of course, all the neighbors come running out. And my grandmother, still brandishing the pistol, says that she wasn't going to stand for anyone dumping trash on her front porch. And if anybody did it again and she caught them, the next round was going in them.
Wow.
No one ever dumped trash on my grandmother's porch. And no one called the police. No one called the cops. But no one ever dumped trash on my grandmother's porch again.
You've got to be strong, that's for sure.
Oh, well, she was a force to be reckoned with. I mean, she came over to this country by herself when she was 16 years old because her mother had abandoned her in the old country. So she earned her own passage over here by selling fruit and came over alone. So
wow.
this was a sturdy woman. Hello, Sam. Oh, Sam's here.
Hi, Sam.
He's got the run of the house now.
Oh, how cute is that? He's back.
Oh, yeah. He's a sweetheart. He's proving to be very affectionate.
That's lovely, because it could have gone, you know, so many different ways. You don't know, do you, the personality of the cat?
This guy is a sweetheart.
No.
But my grandmother was, and my grandmother didn't like cats. but she was a force. She was a force to be reckoned with. My grandparents owned a confectionery. There's like a sweet shop, like a soda shop, and my uncle was he had joined the Naval Reserve and was home on leave. And one of his friends was a gun collector. But this idiot brings his newest acquisition to the store, and it's loaded. And it goes off, and it shoots my uncle in the abdomen. And he got shot the same way Lee Harvey Oswald got shot, the Kennedy assassin, except it ricocheted off his belt buckle. And it traveled, so it lost velocity. I remember when I seeing my uncle bare-chested, he lay on the floor listening to music, and he had an entrance wound in his abdomen about the size of your thumb, and an exit wound on his back, a scar about the size of the palm of your hand.
Oh.
But he lived. And he was 18 years old, and the reason I bring it up is because. Apparently, because this was a big deal, getting shot was a big deal. The local paper sent a reporter over, and I've got this clipping somewhere in the house. But there's a picture. There's a picture was on the front page of this small woman in a babushka. She's got a shawl over her head. She's wearing a shawl, and she's got six policemen holding her back because she's trying to beat the shit out of this guy. The guy that shot her son.
Wow.
And I mean, she's got her fist up in the air, and this guy has got his arms in front of him, trying to bend her off. And there's six cops pulling her off of this guy.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, you didn't fuck with that. Yeah, you didn't fuck with my grandmother. She could crush. She could. I thought everybody's grandmother could do that, but she could break walnuts in her bare hands.
Oh my goodness, that's tough.
She was strong. She was tremendously strong. Yeah, like I said, you didn't screw with my grandmother. but she was as sweet, and she's pretty much the poem that we just read. She was as sweet and as tender and as loving. I see her nurse baby birds. They would fall out of the nest, and she'd bring them in the house, and she'd nurse them, and she'd nurse animals. And she was kind and loving, but strong. You never doubted my grandmother's strength.
Amazing.
She and my dad were the two. I think my two biggest templates for how I live my life now.
That's good to have.
Because they were both strong. But at the same time, deeply emotional, deeply feeling people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Wow.
All righty. So, well, we had this terrific piece by Jenny the Deep. Thank you so much for that. Even though it was a pre-write, it was very good. I actually did take my license as host of the contest, and I removed a couple of pieces. That was the ones I opened for pre-write, because it's amazing to me that the rules are right there, and anytime I submit a pre-write into another contest, I look very carefully at what the prompts are and the contest is about, and I try very hard to make sure that what I'm submitting to them is relevant to what their contest subject matter is. And it always astonishes me. There's always someone that kind of like, I look at what they submit, and I want to look at them and go, did you read this? Did you read the contest at all? Mm-hmm. You know, did you even look at what was involved? And so I tend to delete them rather mercilessly. So, and I used to send pictures. I used to send people notes. Now I don't.
I don't blame you.
Yeah, but if they do a pre-write and they forget to add the name of the number of the prompt, I always write them a note and say, you know, if you want to be considered in judging, please include the number of the prompt in your pre-write. So I give them a period. Anyway, back from Tangent Land again. We're taking a lot of sidesteps down the rabbit hole this tonight. I really shouldn't drink before I do this show. okay, who we got next?
So we have The Recurring Nightmare by Liquid Mind Forever.
Okay, you feel like tackling it?
Sure.
Dive in, Greg.
The Recurring Nightmare by Liquid Mind Forever. Is it incumbent upon the nation's wealth to divest itself for the sake of breaking repetitious monotony? It's a chore to store up all these foibles and complaints, hopes, ill breath, health. We masturbate as we congregate our state of wealth, faces painted camouflage, not the inner whore. Is it incumbent upon the nation's wealth to divest itself? As lions and tigers stalk quietly in secrecy stealth, for what do we arise and align ourselves before we shore up all these foibles and complaints, more ill health? How long will dust accumulate upon this useless crooked self? Do we hope for more of the same or complain all the more? It is incumbent upon the nation's wealth to divest itself. Futility waves her flag in slow gyrations upon irony's shelf. Tedium flaunts herself, bored thoroughly to the core. We store up all these foibles and complaints, ill at health. Lost in the nether world of fairies, we play the elf, nibbling Keebler cookies, we're still looking for the door to store up all these foibles and complaints, hopes, ill health. Is it incumbent upon the nation's well to divest itself? End poem. And she says in her author's notes, the header is what I went with for inspiration.
Yeah, I saw that. That one was a little bit borderline, but when I read it, I thought, you know, you could look at these faces and interpret that way. So I left it in. Plus the fact that she's not inclined to just toss, you know, she's not pull a pin and toss stuff over the fence. So anyway, so Weaver, kick off the comments, please.
Okay. Right, the recurring nightmare. Sorry, I got stuck on the line there. So we have lost the last stanza is one of my favorite things. I like to get to it. It kind of usually brings everything together. In that, I don't know whether people realize they're doing it. It seems to be something instinctive in it, but it tends to bring all of the storyline together. Gives you the sort of the end. And this is one of those lost in Netherworld of fairies. We play the elf, nibbling Keebler Conant cookies. We're still looking for the door to store up all those foibles and complaints, hopes, ill health. It is incumbent upon the nation's wealth to divest itself. ? Yes. I'm afraid I'd have to go back and read it again. I can't really give you my thoughts on it because it's at the moment it's a bit of a dark horse for me. I'm going to have to look at it. Or even I could just listen to you.
I agree with you. I this one is a little bit circuitous, but I read it and I thought to myself, you know, you could look at all these faces and possibly have this occurring to you as a thought process for all the faces.
Uh-huh.
So it is coming out of left field, as we say in the States. But as lions and tigers stalk quietly in secrecy stealth, for what do we arise and align ourselves before we store up all these foibles and complaints, more ill health? Because you look at the color palette of the different faces, and they're actually quite many of them don't look healthy, and that's what I was looking at when I read this.
Mm-hmm.
Is that very many of them don't look, as a matter of fact, her self-portrait is rather uncomplimentary, shall we say, because she's got a self-portrait in there, and I put it right in the center of the header.
Yeah, I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a self-portrait, and that's not the most flattering color palette in the world. How long will dust accumulate upon this useless, crooked self? Do we hope for more of the same or complain all the more? Is it incumbent upon the nation's wealth to divest itself? You know, she could be taking this the prompts as a body, and looking at them and going, you know, this is, you know, as an entity, we don't look healthy. So that's kind of where I was looking at it from. it is rather challenging to try and tie it in to the contest, but I figure it had merit. It wasn't totally off the wall. What do you think, Gray? You find it as challenging?
I definitely do. I mean, it's a strong piece, but there's definitely a lot behind the words that she's written. But, I mean, overall, I think it's a great statement on modern life. So, well done.
Oh, that was brief. Okay. Oh, my goodness, we've got 15 minutes left. What do we have? What do we have? How much do we have left to read? Oh, we got Pam Ray.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. All righty. She was a Jackson Pollock, and it is there. And here's This is the self-portrait. I'll grab this one. She was a Jackson Pollock painting by Pam Ray. She was a Jackson Pollock painting, a beautiful, enchanting mess. She drew people to herself, and no one could figure out why. They only knew they yearned for more, a purposeful accident, a bipolar dance, a splatter of color. Excuse me. Dark and light intertwining, misunderstood, loved and despised. She created a life in vivid brilliance, a world that others could not see or feel or believe in until they gazed upon her, a vivid, masterful lobotomy, rejected and envied. End poem. Yay, Pam.
Excellent read, Bobby. And what are your thoughts, Weaver?
Oh, sorry, I was on mute. yes. Well, Jackson Pollock painting. I can understand that line. One second. I'm losing my voice. So a beautiful, enchanting mess. Yes, you could imagine that. And I can imagine also that face. That face has got the look of, I know far more than you think I do. That's, you can't fool me. I can see right through you. I love that. And a purposeful accident, a bipolar dance, a splatter of color, dark and light intertwining. Yeah, you can see all of that in this. That was very clever, Pam. I like that you've taken that and you've explained the woman, as it were. She, a vivid master. Oh, I like that last couplet. A vivid masterful lobotomy, rejected and envied. Cool, very cool. Yeah, it's a case of, I've got rid of what I don't want and I'm free. That's kind of, I don't know why I'm getting this from the painting and the words, but I thought it was very clever and very, again, this is a little bit different from our darling Pam. Normally, you know, she's got herself tight.
What's going on?
I don't know.
What was that? In her author's notes, she writes, she never looked nice. She looked like art. And art wasn't supposed to look nice. It was supposed to make you feel something.
And that's what I call.
Yeah. And she's right.
Mm-hmm.
But she took that very, very disturbing color palette that she has for her face there, with the blues and the greens, and the yellow background. None of it designed to be comforting. And the furrowed brow, and. She's really imparted a lot of meaning to it. A vivid, masterful lobotomy. Like you said, rejected and envied. So there's no ambivalence in the way that the art makes you feel. You either love it or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Gray, what'd you think?
Yeah, I liked it a lot. You did a great job. You did a great job of reading it, Bobby. And but you know, I thought it was it captured the essence of the pictures in the contest. I thought, the pictures are very definitely different colored and almost, I don't know, like you can see the Pollock in it and. You can see the beauty of his work and the madness to it, I guess. You can see the madness in it, which is a great ability to bring that out of the right. So I thought it was beautifully written and did a great job of reading it, Bobby.
Thank you. Great piece, Pam. Thank you very much for that contribution. Okay, what have we got left?
All right, so next we have, post it to the board. we have Eve's Daughter Legacy. Eve's Daughter's Legacy by Sia Roy.
Okay. You feel like you can do this, Will Weaver?
Yeah, no problem. Okay.
Okay, okay.
Eve's Daughter's Legacy. Lovely picture. I felt this way before a coalition of disparate men determined to play, pray, ultimately slay. First my drive, spirit, mind, to enslave my body, to finally in dormancy lay. And when I bursted forth with a silent scream into an environment where females played second as a baby male stole every scene. But I am helpless and poor. May Jehovah pay attention to me. You are my helper and my rescuer. My God, do not delay. Yes, I sadly came to realize in many diverse cultural women's lives, seemingly destined and designed to traverse bleakness due to domination during cycles of circulating full moons, crammed with howling wolves, tracking scents of womankind. Schooled immediately, unfortunately, readily, and all too soon, needed time for me to cultivate positivity from a darkened brain, systematically and thoroughly divinely refined. To come to accept and believe, Jehovah is my crag and my stronghold, and the one who rescues me. My God is my rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and my horn of salvation, my secure refuge. Psalm 16:2. Opportunities provide me as I stroll a path through a forest of haze, until I saw before my limited gaze that light on the horizon, shining as a beacon to the blind, enabling me to leave any horrors buried mercifully and deeply behind, forever and always. For I learned these truths in my existence, proven the one listening to me will dwell in security and be undisturbed by the dread of calamity, Proverbs 1:33. You will safeguard those who fully lean on you, or possibly those whose inclination is unshakable. You will give them continuous peace, because it is in you that they trust. Isaiah 26:3. On these
Weaver, I'm going to interrupt you.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to interrupt you because, A, this is long. B, my contest rules say no religion.
Cool.
And that's one that's punctuated with it, so I'm going to remove this.
Okay.
I didn't see that. I didn't read far enough down to. So let's move on to something else. Can you line us up with another one quickly? We got 8 minutes. Gray?
Gray, are you with us?
Okay, there you go.
Cool.
All righty.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Right.
That's
so
quite as long.
Yeah, I haven't quite got it yet. Oh, I've got it. The Rattle of Mortality.
Yes, please.
The Rattle of Mortality. The Rattle of Mortality will crawl through the veins of the trees of your garden, and all your flowers will wither away. All the lush appearance of your garden will be reduced to the realm of wrinkles and wilting. All the tree leaves will fall and succumb to the stormy winter winds, casting them anywhere. Over the years, the winter's tears will paint the walls of our homes with the color of sorrow, and the hue of the mournful departure will cover our doorways. When the day passes, the streets and lanes will forget us, and they will be mindful of other ones, just as they forget the ones who preceded us, the ones who used to pursue their dreams on these roads before. When the day passes, the walking faces in the street will not pay the slightest attention towards us, and the old faces will never be met again, since they will be assigned to the realm of oblivion, where they may be more fortunate, since the oblivion may show more care. Even the places that used to witness our romantic encounters will be demolished. They will unceremoniously torn down and replaced triumphantly with the new ones, the new ones that will mock our defeat by the passing of time, as if they have granted the assignment of mortality by their immortality, by their imaginary partial favorable fate. The passage of time will steal the glimmer of happiness from our eyes, and will replace it with the gloomy darkness of grief that will have been accumulated over our eyes for years. The passage of time will steal the mellow songs of hope from our hearts and replace them with the mournful, sad songs of wailing despair, and the lonely nights will show a gloating smile on their sordid faces when the spiteful nights see our defenselessness. Because of the gradual creepy internal demolishing caused by the passage of years. But your youthful beauty will stay forever roaming our old streets, calling upon our previous joyful lives behind the ancient, dilapidated walls. Your everlasting beauty will keep gaining its renewed youth from the auspicious rays of the sun, the rejuvenating light of hope that always shines on your angelic countenance every day, the light of hope that fills your heart and will make your eternal youth continue to laugh merrily at our old meeting places. Because your eternal youth is my everlasting love, and my eternal love for you will never, ever fade away. End poem. Blimey.
Beautiful read, Weaver. And Bobby, what did you think? Hello, Bobby.
I was mutating. I again, this is a pre-write, and I tend to look at the pre-writes very critically. But I could see where he could look at the faces that the artist has portrayed and see, derive these emotions from those particular images. So I like the fact that he talks about that things change. That life is basically, he's saying life has changed, but to use Weaver's tact, because your eternal youth is my everlasting love, my eternal love for you will never fade away. So he's seeing everything through the eyes of love, and even though life changes, everything sees it with a softened focus because it's softened through love. So I could see where he would be able to glean that from the artwork. Weaver.
Hello. Yes, I think. Point. I take your point totally. This could easily be looking through all the different faces and plucking bits and pieces here to make this piece of poetry work. And it does. It does. Yeah. And I do like the fact that, as you said, the last couple of lines, again, is saying what you said. Change happens. We all change. It's inevitable. We have no choice. But the fact that you can then still connect to the person that you love, out with anything that's an external change to them, you can still see them as the person that you met and loved, plus you can see them as the person they've become, and those two together give you that wonderful feeling of the love you feel. And that's great. I like that a lot. Very clever. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah. Great comment.
Yeah, you know, I thought it was a great poem, you know, speaking to love being the eternal youth medicine. You know, love can keep your lover young. And, it's a wonderful rate, you know, and it was well read. So thank you for sharing that. And
we have
90 seconds left.
Yeah, I was reminded of my father had a picture of my mother in his wallet. And they were married by a justice of the peace. So my mother didn't have the long white wedding dress. She had a very nice frock on with a large corsage, looked like it was a shrub growing out of her shoulder. My dad was in a nice suit, and they had pictures of when they were married. And my dad had a picture of my mother standing just after they'd been married, and he had it laminated, and my mother was looking for something, and my dad had sent her to his wallet, and she was looking for something in his wallet, and she says Harry, she says and this was, they'd been married for quite some time, and I was around and in my teens, and my mother says, Harry, why do you still have this old picture of our wedding in your wallet? And I will never forget my father's response. He says, because that's the way I always think of you.
Lovely. Mm-hmm. Lovely.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Yeah. I never forgot that. So, with 90 seconds, how many do we have many carryovers?
Let me see here. So we have 1, 2, 3.
And don't count the ones that we threw in there just in case.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so 2 then. No, 1. One, if we
not
don't
bad.
Count those.
No, we won't count them. Hey, well Weaver, as always, a delight. You know, I wish I'm going to send you. I swear, I'm half tempted to send you a plane ticket just so I can invite you over to cook coffee. You know?
Well, I'd be there in an instant if I could. It would be instant coffee. Instant coffee. Oh,
I make good coffee. I make scones too.
Oh, I love it. I'll be there one day.
Thank you so much for calling in. I really appreciate it. Gray, as always, my trusted co-pilot. I couldn't do it without you. Thank you so much. I hope everybody
enjoys
the rest of the
day. Great to be here.
I'm going to go back to my I'm binge-purging Star Wars, binge-watching Star Wars. So I'm going to go back to that tomorrow. Me and Sam. who was right here for the end of the show. So good night, everyone, and thank you so much. Love you.
Good night, my dear.
Thank you
so
much, too, Bobby. Good night, everybody.
Good night, Greg.
Good night, everyone. Much love.
Good night. As I said before, I bring the chaos. I bring the chaos, and Greg brings the calmness. So we're doing okay. Good night, my dear.
Yeah.
Good night.
All right.